Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 298, The Best Thing You've Eaten All Summer. Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. I record this podcast at the Castle Inn in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. This is where I have a studio called Yinhu Studio, where I host some stitching and slow fashion classes. If you live in the area or will be in the area and you're interested in what classes are coming up, you can check my website and click on Stitch Classes at Yinhu Studio to find out what will be running soon and how to register for the event. I've just posted some new classes for fall, and I'm thinking about some different ideas just before the holidays. Today's episode will feature the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, and so forth, and off the shelf. Hello and welcome. I am coming to you from a very hot and humid Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania, where the wind is starting to pick up and we are very hopeful for some accumulating rainfall. It's been several weeks since there's been anything more than just a few drips. And it's been the summer of trying to keep plants alive. So I'm hopeful that just before school starts, we can get some considerable rainfall and I won't have to worry about spending an hour or two lugging water from the creek every morning. Earlier in the spring, Samuel and I worked to replace invasive species that we had removed from our property, about an acre space of our property last summer, with plants that would be attractive to pollinators, native species, deer-resistant things. And though they are hardy plants, they have nevertheless been struggling quite a bit because of the lack of rainfall. We have had success in attracting pollinators such as monarch butterflies. Right now, there are about 14 monarch caterpillars decimating my swamp milkweed. I've already taken quite a few nearly full-grown caterpillars over to some milkweed at a local wildlife preserve here in Cherry Valley. And then more caterpillars appeared and continued munching. We've also had monarch caterpillars on our butterfly weed. I did not realize that butterfly weed could serve as a host plant for monarchs. I thought it was only the milkweed family. But butterfly weed is in that special family, and we've had some caterpillars on the butterfly weed as well. We had a bit of an aphid infestation on the butterfly weed. So yesterday, Samuel and I released some ladybugs into that section of our garden. We're learning a lot. We're working hard. It's keeping us outside a great deal, which is wonderful. And we're starting to think now about, you know, things that we hope to plant in the coming years to kind of fill in some spaces that we didn't get to. And we're taking a look at what has done well, what has really struggled, to take time to think about that over the winter. Music. We have been feasting on local produce this summer and trying out a number of recipes featuring vegetables that we can get readily at the farmer's market. I titled this episode, The Best Thing You've Eaten All Summer, because I'd really like to hear from listeners, what was the best thing you ate this summer? Did you make it? Did you purchase it? Maybe at an ice cream stand? Did someone else make it for you? What have you been enjoying? And do you have any recipe ideas for savoring and soaking up the last bits of the season? I have a top three. One of them is the internet sensation watermelon sushi. I made it for a house party we had when Yinhu turned 100 years old. It was a hit and it was very easy to do. So we've been enjoying that. We've had it a couple of times. We also made a deconstructed eggplant parmesan recipe from Food and Wine, which doesn't require frying the eggplant, but yields a really delicious result. One of the secrets in the recipe is that breadcrumbs, I use panko breadcrumbs, are combined with garlic and grated lemon rind. It's really, really tasty. The final one is one I made this morning, and it is so good. I just knew I had to talk about it with you and see if any of you fellow Taproot subscribers have maybe made this already. It is the sweet corn cookies in the Savor issue of Taproot, issue 52, just out. They are so wonderfully good. I was so eager to make these cookies when I got the magazine from my mailbox yesterday and flipped through it yesterday afternoon that when I got up this morning, I got out some sweet corn from my freezer. So I have a practice of grilling sweet corn, and I usually grill an extra ear or two, more than we will eat for dinner, usually. And I cut the corn off the cob and put it into the freezer. So by wintertime, I have a bag or two of very roasty, toasty corn kernels in my freezer. I put them in chili. I put them in soups. It's just a really good way to bring some of the warmth and sunshine of summer into a winter kitchen. Because I didn't have any sweet corn, fresh sweet corn on hand, I just pulled a cup of this frozen corn out of the freezer, and I really like the result. So I followed the directions of sauteing the corn with a little bit of butter and honey, and then I whizzed that up in the food processor before adding it to the cookie batter. And it has not just the sweet corn flavor, but also a little bit of charred grilled flavor as well. If you subscribe to Taproot, give this a try. If you don't subscribe to Taproot, I think this recipe is worth the price of subscription. It's just so good. And I love the combination of savory and sweet things. So this was really up my street. Before I start talking about recent crafting, I want to announce the winner of a drawing that I hosted in the last episode, episode 297. I asked listeners to leave a comment with some detail about the moon, and I have selected a winner. It is Elise O'Thomaset, who posted about spending part of childhood in Japan and learning the song or story of Sakura, a legend of a rabbit in the moon. And when she looks at the moon, she sees a rabbit pounding rice cakes, not a man in the moon. I love this comment, and I replied that when I was a child, I did not know about the rice cakes. But whenever anyone talked about the man in the moon, I always insisted that what I saw was the Easter bunny carrying a basket. And I always got a lot of very strange stares. Maybe if I had spent part of my child in Tokyo, I would have found some people who understood me and what I saw in the moon. But congratulations, Elise Otamaset. Please get in touch with me via Instagram message is great. And I will talk to you about getting you your prize. Congrats. And thanks for participating and playing along to everyone who left some really lovely comments about the moon. Last time I recorded an episode, it was the end of July, and I was working toward completion of Bryce Cardigan number 4. This one was knit with Holstgarn Coast yarn, a wool cotton blend in black. It's a very fine yarn that plumps and fluffs a bit upon blocking, and I have been wearing both this black sweater and the yak one I knit just before all summer long. And every time I go someplace where there might be air conditioning, I have one of those sweaters with me. I have a really special way of folding it and rolling it up and storing it in a super lightweight fabric bag in my purse so that it doesn't resist wrinkles, but it minimizes the wrinkling and kind of keeps it nice. It also makes it so things in my purse don't put pulls into the garments. And that has just been part of my summer uniform. I know it's kind of boring to knit the same thing over and over, but as I mentioned, what I learned when I was doing the Wool and 100 Day Dress Challenge, I really learned some things about myself and what works and what I want to be happening in my wardrobe. And adding these little sweaters was totally worth it. A little bit boring, but totally worth it. So when I finished Bryce number 4, what I should have done was start my Rhinebeck sweater. But instead of doing that, I kind of took a breather and went in a totally opposite direction and knit the sweater called Look at My Holes, designed by James Watts. This is part of a set that has kind of a finer knit little triangle bra-like top under it. I did not knit that companion piece. I just knit the sweater with the larger holes. I knit a cropped version, and I used yarn that I had purchased quite a while back. It was a collaboration between 1111 and Tatter Library. It's 100% cotton yarn, hand spun, and indigo dyed. The yarn has a lot of inconsistencies. It's part of the beauty of it. It's also part of what made me hesitate many times before using it or employing it in a garment. I think this is a really good fit. This Look at My Whole sweater is a really good fit for the yarn because inconsistencies are not that noticeable because you don't just have like this swath of stockinette stitch. There's holes all over the sweater. I cut some places that were super, super thin and knotted or double the yarn. You know, I used a lot of methods to kind of work with the inconsistencies of the yarn. And I think the pattern really stood up to it. So now I have this very lightweight, super fun, kind of trendy cropped sweater to throw over my Ogden camis. I can wear it with my Amy jumpsuit and my Amy jumpsuit dress hacks. And I can wear it with my most recent make, which is the saltwater slip dress designed by Friday Pattern Company. That's what I'm wearing it with in the photo I took for this episode. And it was a really great make. I had tried a tank top version of this pattern earlier in the spring because I wanted to experiment with lining the front. The pattern as it's created is unlined, and it's a slip dress, as the name suggests. It has spaghetti straps with adjustable notions. It has a waist tie, and you can either make it just above the knee length or quite long, a maxi length with side slits. So I made the maxi length with side slits. I used a navy colored noil fabric. Maybe it's like a Tencel. It has a ton of drape, and I really like the resulting drape of the dress. This pattern from Friday Pattern Company is awesome because I was able to purchase a paper pattern and didn't have to print anything out. The directions are clear. There's a video tutorial to go along with it so you can follow the written directions, but you can also reinforce that with wonderful Chelsea showing you every step of making the dress on the video tutorial. And there is the absolute hands down cleverest way of making side slits. I will use it again in a future pattern. It was fun. It was easy. I felt super smart when I was doing it, and made making the whole dress very enjoyable. This is the kind of dress I will get a lot of wear from. So I think I will be considering and maybe searching a fabric sale or looking through some dead stock that's online to find another color and another fabric weight, perhaps, to make a different version of this dress. I think it's the kind of thing that can go from season to season. Right now it's summer. I'm wearing it with this look at my whole sweater. As the weather gets cooler, I could put a jacket over it or a sweater. And the navy color means that it will coordinate with a lot of things in my wardrobe. Once again, that is the saltwater slip dress from Friday Pattern Company. And I also mentioned Look at My Holes, the sweater designed by James Watts. Now on my needles is my Rhinebeck sweater. Like I mentioned earlier, I probably should have cast it on at the beginning of August. That gives 2 solid months of knitting and eliminates the sort of race to the finish before Rhinebeck. Technically, I did cast it on in August because I cast it on yesterday, but there is a lot of knitting to do, my friends. I have decided to knit the Ornata blouse. This is a pattern designed by Teti Lutzak, and it is a blouse-like sweater, as the name suggests, with voluminous sleeves featuring some color work. I will read the description from the pattern. And this pattern was widely and enthusiastically test knit. So there are a lot of examples to look at online, a lot of comments, just a lot of beautiful ideas. Ornata from Latin means covered with ornaments, and I think the name suits this design very well. It was inspired by traditional Ukrainian embroidered blouses in which most of the embroidery is done on the sleeves. It might not be an everyday garment, but definitely a special one, especially for those of us coming from Eastern Europe. The blouse has a relaxed, slightly oversized fit with a bit of exaggerated wide sleeves. Both body and sleeves are worked top down in the round and gathered at the hem and cuffs. There's also an option to finish the body with a folded hem with picots. And the neckline begins with a picot cast on. It's a beautiful, beautiful garment. And I decided to knit this in Garthenor organic lace that I purchased from the Woolly Thistle. The main color is chalkboard, which is a very, very, very deep brown. It reads black in photographs, but the yarn is a very deep brown. And the contrast color for the sleeves will be chalk, which is just a natural ivory white. Both of these are undyed, and the hand of this yarn is absolutely gorgeous. It is such a joy to work with. And I'm actually pleased that the chalkboard color is a little more brown leaning than black because it makes it easier to see and to knit. So far, I have completed the picot hem neckline and done a series of knit rounds and increase rounds at the neckline of this sweater. I am currently staying on US 1.5s. I did not switch to US 2.5s as the pattern calls for because this lace weight yarn is incredibly thin. I want to keep the loft and density up by knitting it at quite a fine gauge. So we'll see how that works for the fit. I may need to do more increases and maybe sort of work a bit of a larger size than I would ordinarily. We'll see how it goes. It seems that some of the knitters who have knit this blouse and posted their photographs online have an overly wide neckline and really a lot more ease at the bust than I think is necessary. So I'm just kind of keeping it on the smaller side for now and seeing how it goes. When I started looking at this sweater at Mary Beth's suggestion, because she's sort of like my Rhinebeck sweater whisperer, I started thinking about, right away, I started thinking about pairing this blouse with a reverse applique skirt and working to design a motif that was kind of like a riff on the stitch pattern in the sleeves. So I started doodling and gradually I worked my way to a design with sort of like leaves and berries and stems that are not exactly what you see on the sleeves of the Ornata blouse, but they're sort of reminiscent of that. And I cut this design from a wax paper stencil material and used a rose gold fabric paint to stencil it onto knit fabric. I also ordered some ivory-colored fabric to be my bottom layer of the reverse applique skirt. And I have started stitching the first of 4 panels. So over the next month and a half, I will alternate between knitting on this Ornata blouse and stitching on this Alabama Channon 4-panel reverse applique skirt. This is the first time I've ever designed the motif that I've stenciled onto fabric. I really enjoyed the process and I plan to do more of this in the future. It was a lot of fun to keep working and reworking the design. And over the years, as I've been stitching and cutting a lot of Alabama Channon designs, sort of developed an eye for what kinds of shapes work well for that kind of thing and what kinds of shapes either look like blobs or just fall flat with that kind of thing. So I was able to use some of my experience when creating this design as well. I'll include some photos of this in the show notes and we'll give you an update on this the next time I record an episode. I'll probably post some progress photos to Instagram as well. I did post a while back a photograph of the 4 panels of the skirt after I had used the fabric paint to spray the motif. So maybe I'll give that a link as well. For Off the Shelf, I would like to share a poem by a new-to-me poet. I was doing a search on poets.org for poems featuring butterflies and found this one by Fatima Asghar. She is a young poet. She's from LA. She's a filmmaker and educator as well as being a poet. And she's the writer and creator of the Emmy-nominated web series Brown Girls. This poem is titled, "I Don't Know What Will Kill Us First, The Race War or What We've Done to the Earth." I'll read it, and if you'd like to hear the poet reading her own work, I will provide a link, and there's an audio file on the website. I don't know what will kill us first, the race war or what we've done to the earth. So I count my hopes. The bumblebees are making a comeback. One snug tight in a purple flower I passed to get to you. Your favorite color is purple, but Prince's was orange, and we both find this hard to believe. Today, the park is green. We take grass for granted. The leaves chuckle around us. Behind your head, a butterfly rests on a tree. It's been there our whole conversation. By my old apartment was a butterfly sanctuary where I would read and 2 little girls would sit next to me. You caught a butterfly once but didn't know what to feed it, so you trapped it in a jar and gave it to a girl you liked. I asked if it died. You say you like to think it lived a long life. Yes, it lived a long life.